will be dismissed for our class. Gracious Heavenly Kind Father, we thank you for once again allowing us to meet again, study your word, better representative of the body of Christ, serving the scriptures so we know how to conduct ourselves and navigate ourselves through this time. The scriptures to guide us on our way home. We thank you for teachers that came out today to help administer the word. We thank you for all the people that are going to participate. I enjoy the children that come out and participate as well and have many questions and answers also. We live in a country, a prosperous nation, that we can have good care, and those that are sick and undergoing tests are getting better. We're grateful for that, and we pray that you be with those that are still suffering different illnesses. Pray that you be with our sick and shut-in that are unable to come out. Pray that you be with them and keep them comfortable in their homes and keep virus and away from them as well as the rest of us. You be with the leaders of this world, of the coming elections, that we pick good people that will guide us, govern over us. It's our prayer and reading and studying your word. Help us dwell and represent you. In Jesus' holy name we pray.
And you probably don't need that for
not using it tonight. Well, that was an interesting noise. All right. Good evening, everyone. It's great to be looking at y'all from right here. Glad to see everyone. So, book left off in Luke 13, where we'll be picking up. I'm sure it's been talked about before when y'all started the book of Luke, but just to review, I guess, what do we know about Luke outside of writing Luke and Acts? We know his profession, right? What is his profession? Physician, right? And I remember actually the last time I was teaching here, we were talking about characters of the book of Acts, and we were talking about Luke, and I mentioned that because he's a physician in his book, specifically in his gospel, he's more specific about what's wrong with these people that Jesus is healing. Like I said, I'm sure y'all probably have talked about that before, but we see an example of that coming up in chapter 14. So that's pretty cool. Started off fast. I did want to go ahead and start, though. We kind of just dropped verse 34 and 35 at the end of class on Sunday, so let's go ahead and hit that a little bit more before we move into chapter 14. I like, if you would like to, might be tough with masks. I like to call on people to read. But I don't know, some of you wearing masks might not want to take it off, so I don't know. Miss Vicky, you want to read? Miss Vicky Goddard, do you want to read? Cool. Read just 34 and 35 for us, please.
O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills prophets, the stones those sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together, just as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you would not have it. Behold, your house is left to your desolate, and I say to you, you will not see me until the time comes when you say, blessed is he who comes to the name of the Lord.
All right. Well, it just dawned on me that y'all can't read. I have to read because I have the mic and the phone bridge and the iPod pad and all that. So never mind. I get to read. All right, though. Back to these verses, though. This is pretty strong stuff that you're saying, right? I mean, it's pretty strong language. Because he's, just to repeat it, I guess, for the recording more than anything for the people at home, it says, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather her children together as hen gathers her brood under her wings, but you were not willing. We studied the Old Testament, right? I mean, we know what happened to God's prophets. Almost without exception, right? I mean, sure, Elijah went up to heaven in a chariot and whatnot. And, you know, there were some of these prophets that weren't as persecuted. But you get into those minor prophets and some of the stuff that those guys went through. Yeah, I mean, these people weren't nice to God's prophets and speakers and teachers and all that that he sent. Uses this image about the hen gathering chicks under her wings. I'd never raised no chickens. I don't know nothing about them. I know about the water they drink from the previous job, but that's about it. But This is like a baby not wanting to go to her mother, right? To their mom. It just doesn't make sense. You know, it's like Kayla's my little one refusing to let me or Katrina pick her up. Which might happen in a tantrum sometimes, you know. But point is, they're always going to come back, right? He's telling them, look, I'm trying. My wings are out and open. I'm trying to get y'all to come back. I'm here. You're not. And so, this is a straight accusation, you know, to the Jews, you know, Jerusalem, city of the Jews, right? See, your house is left to you desolate, and assuredly I say to you, you shall not see me until the time comes when you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. So, he already talks about their house being desolate. What's the metaphor there? What's he mean by your house is desolate?
A house is in shambles. It's not. It's empty, and it's falling apart.
What did the temple look like?
Well, the temple was going to. I mean, the temple was beautiful in its
day. Yeah, right. Then it's probably the prettiest structure on the face of the earth, right? But, I mean, even the Romans didn't gild all their stuff in gold.
Right.
You know.
There was going to be a time when there was not going to be one stone left upon another.
Yeah. So we get. Like most, like prophecy happens, we get immediate and future context, right? So, you're already there. That's what he's saying. You're already there. Now, this is coming. You know, he talks about that before and after this, right?
Well, we understand that concept because if a person was on for a murder trial and he gets the death sentence, I mean, it's not immediate. I mean, they don't shoot him right there, but he knows he's a dead man.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to happen somewhere in the future.
Yeah. I'm going to toss this out there. I like to blow the kids' minds sometimes and think like stuff humans can't really understand. I lost my train of thought. I'm real bad about you losing my train of thought, you guys. It just happens to me. Please forgive, and we'll just move on sometimes. Trying to think about what Bill just said and remember. It's not going to happen. Anyway, so yes, I remember now. God created time, right? Our fourth dimension, he created time. What's between us and the moon? Space. Well, that's something. You can measure it, right? We can't imagine nothing. Humans can't imagine. It's just one of those things we can't grasp. God doesn't see time linearly. Linearly. I don't know if I said that right. Right? We look at a picture, we see the whole thing at once. It's got two dimensions. We can handle that, right? God looks at our dimensions. He sees the whole thing at once. Right? He knows all, sees all. I don't know how God thinks. I guess if he wants to watch us like a movie, he can, but he knows exactly the beginning and the end, right? So it's interesting to me how prophecy works, though. Is this just the building thing? And it's kind of like one event to God, and it's like just this thing that happens through creation? You know what I mean? See what I'm saying? Because they are all related through prophecy. You know, how does God look at that? We don't know. We can't understand that. I just like kind of think about that sometimes, right? Like, how does God understand? How does God see our time? He made our time.
Right. Hey, you hit on a good point. Is that when he talks about in the previous verse, he says, how often have I gathered you? How many times have I tried it?
Mm-hmm.
Over and over and over again, I tried it. For millennia, I tried this. Your house is forsaken now, has been forsaken, and will
be
forsaken.
Yeah. Yep.
It's your fault.
Yeah, it's your fault you did it. Like I said, we read the Old Testament. You can see time and time again them falling away and leaving. And God says, now you're playing the harlot with idols, guys. Good job. You know. But yeah, Jason, they definitely, God gives everybody a chance, right? Always. He gave the Jews a million chances, it seems like, right? I mean, how many? It's like, what if my kid loved Roger more than he loved me? No offense, Roger. How would that make me feel? Really, dude? You like somebody better than your own daddy. That's what these Israelites did. That's what the Jews did. And eventually they decided they just wanted to be daddy, right? And so that's what they started doing, laying down their own laws and doing their own thing. At any rate, house is already desolate. We know coming up in, you know, a few decades, the temple will eventually be destroyed. I think it might be a little stretch to pin that directly as a prophecy on this verse, but I don't have a hard time doing it either. So But either way, we get the point. So, all right, anything else on those two verses before we hop into 14? All right. Okay, so verse 4, or chapter 14, it says, "Now it happened, as he went into the house of one of the rulers of the Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath, that they watched him closely. And behold, there was a certain man before them who had dropsy. And Jesus, answering, spoke to the lawyers and Pharisees, saying, Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" You realize in this one, he's just going to head them off. He started doing that already, right? He knows why they're there. He knows what's going on. He's not even going to let them make the accusation. He's just like, okay, well, I see where we're going with this guy. So is it lawful for me to heal this guy on the Sabbath? Right? I mean, that's what Jesus' question is. We got a man with a bad arm sitting here. Can I heal him or not according to you? Right? He didn't. And he's asking them, you know, the question is foreign. And what do you think God's law is? Right? What do you think the law concerning the Sabbath is? But God, Jesus knows what the law concerning the Sabbath is. He knows what they know about the law of the Sabbath and all that. The question is, how do you feel about me doing this on Sabbath? That's how I read this.
Well, it says they held their peace. They would have betrayed themselves one way or another, even if they said yes or no.
Yep.
But silence is basically, if you don't hear no...
It's an admission of guilt, right? So...
I'm just going to say, if you go back to Luke 6, verse 5, it says, Jesus is talking, and he said to them, "The Son of Man also is the Lord of the Sabbath."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's going away and changing anyways, and y'all aren't doing it right and misunderstanding and misapplying the law anyways.
Exactly.
So, but yeah, so continuing on there, verse 4, it says, "But they kept silent, and he took him and healed him and let him go. Then he answered them, saying, Which of you, having a donkey or an ox that has fallen into a pit, will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day?" And they could not answer him regarding these things. It's a rhetorical question. He knew they didn't have an answer.
When you think about that, those animals were very expensive in those days. In fact, it would be kind of like akin to our car.
Yeah. So they were so strict on the Sabbath, you know, and everything, and all these laws, and so strict about the tithe and everything they've added in and all this. And he's like, but let's be real for a second, guys, right? Let's be real. Your donkey falls in a ditch. It's going to die. You're going to be out of donkey. You might be plowing with it, might be trading grain with it, might be doing who knows what with it, might be riding it, might be a pack mule. You need the donkey. You're going to pull the donkey out of the ditch, right? What, are they going to sit there and lie and say, oh, no, I'm going to let my donkey die? Obviously, everyone around knows that's not what you're going to do, regardless of what day of the week it is, right? All right, so back to the medical thing, though. Here Luke calls it dropsy, right? Y'all know what dropsy is? I can't say the word. It's like edema. How do you say that? Well, it sort of. It was kind of like heart failure or related kind of thing. At least it has similar symptoms. But it's basically buildup of fluid, primarily in your extremities, like feet, ankles, hands, arms, that kind of thing. So I don't know exactly what was wrong with this. In Matthew 12, in the parallel account, it says he had a withered hand. Whatever was wrong with his hand, Luke made a little more, you know, specified an illness to it. You know, and just saying, well, his hand didn't work, which is what Matthew said. He said he had this wrong with his arm. So there's an example of Luke throwing his medical jargon into his book, right? I flipped my Bible and didn't ink it. All right. So at this point, though, in chapter 14, we kind of see a shift in Jesus' teaching. Not really a shift, because it's really all of his teaching, but this right here, and really, you know, the parables he's about to teach, and then the lesson at the end of the parables, is basically about your priorities. And, you know, we have a lot of resources available to us, and we can prioritize how we spend those resources, right, in the way we choose. God gives us free will. We have money, we have time, we have skills, we have a lot of things to offer each other, right? That's what Jesus is addressing here. And it's good lessons for us, obviously about, you know, how do we prioritize God in our lives and our service to God and all that. It's lessons for them because they obviously have their priorities way off, right? And Jesus is about to teach them some real simple lessons about this is what it means to prioritize God, right?
And, you know, it appears that these Pharisees, lawyers, and all them, they had a certain order, a hierarchy, or rank of who's first, who's second, who's third. And even Jesus even says, and you love to be put into the prime seats, all the way down the front row, basically.
Yep. So let's get into that in verse 7. But anyway, so let's finish this priorities. So these first few verses of 14, he says, what's your priorities? Well, you're acting like Sabbath is your priority, but you're putting on a show. You know, you're acting like that's it. If you were being real about it, you would sit here and stand and tell me, yes, Jesus, I would pull my donkey out of the ditch and then get back to, you know, worshiping on the Sabbath and doing the things I'm supposed to do on the Sabbath. That is exactly what I would do, you know. But they don't have that priority, to be honest, you know, and to have that relationship with God. They want the relationship with each other and with the power and all that that we have very much discussed. So let's move on there in verse 7. Like I said, we're talking about, Jesus talking about priorities, right, and how you feel and all that. So verse 7, so he told a parable to those who were invited when he noted how they chose the best places, saying to them, when you are invited by anyone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in the best place, lest anyone more honorable than you be invited by him. And he who invited you and him come to you and say, give place to this man. And then you begin with shame to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit down in the lowest place, so that when he who invited you comes, he may say to you, friend, go up higher. Then you will have glory in the presence of those who sit at the table with you. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Then he also said to him who invited them, when you give a dinner or a supper, do you not ask your friends, your brothers, your relatives, nor rich neighbors, lest they also invite you back and you be repaid? But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you, for you shall be repaid in the resurrection of the just. All right, we're going to read James chapter 4, a couple of verses there. We sing the song, right, about humble yourself in the sight of the Lord. It's really more directly from James chapter 4 here, starting in verse 8. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Lament and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. And then before we get into it, I'm going to Job. I'm pick up reading in Job. It's chapter 22. I guess just start in verse 21. This is when one of Job's, you know, great friends comes to him and tells him how evil he is and he's being punished by God, right? But this is some of this advice anyway, which isn't bad in this case. It says in verse 21, now acquaint yourself with him and be at peace. Therefore, good will come to you. Receive, please, instruction from his mouth and lay up his words in your heart. If you return to the Almighty, you will be built up. You will remove iniquity far from your tents. You will lay your gold in the dust, and the gold of Ophir among the stones of the brooks. Yes, the Almighty God will be your gold and your precious silver. For then you will have your delight in the Almighty and lift up your face to God. I'm going to pause right. I might even stop right there because that pretty much sums it up, right? God is what's important. God's your silver and gold, right? Delight in the Almighty and lift your face up to God. It said he will build you up, remove iniquity from your tents. This mentions several different things, and then Luke mentioned a couple different priorities. We get silver and gold in here. So we talk about money and our priorities regarding money. And we also talk about ego and our priorities regarding ourselves. Right? Because that was the problem that this guy had. Was, well, we had a lot of problems. The guy that threw the feast, threw the dinner at Jesus was at, he said, look, you invite all these people because you want to get invited back. Right? He said, you inviting all these people, the rich folks, your family, all this kind of stuff, because you know next month one of them is going to throw a feast and they're going to invite you back. And then they're going to come and find you and seat you up a little higher and all that kind of stuff. That's what you're about. And he tells the guests, look, don't y'all be acting all important. All right, nobody's important. Sit down here. Let somebody else tell you you are important. Right? Your priority to yourself is to be as humble as you can possibly be. Right? To be as lowly as you can be, whatever you want to call it. Basically, you feel like there is nothing, there is nobody less, no, there's nobody, what am I saying, less important than me. That's what I'm trying to say. Everybody's more important than me. God is more important than me. My family's more important than me. Y'all are more important than me. Everything and everybody needs to be more important to me, right? Because if that's my priorities, then my money goes to God's work. My time goes to God's work. Everything, right? But if I'm worried about myself, then my money goes to myself and my time goes to myself. And I'm telling myself I deserve it. I don't know what I've done to deserve anything. I've done a lot to deserve a lot of bad. I know that. But I haven't done a lot to deserve a lot of good sometimes. At least it doesn't feel like it, right? But, so he's telling these guests, watch what you do. Watch how you feel. Watch your pride. Watch your ego. Watch your priorities about yourself. I'm a pretty severe introvert. I've talked to some of y'all about that. Some of y'all, you guys I love and trust. That's why I get to talk to you and you get to see me and see me be emotional even sometimes and all that. That's because I love and trust you guys, so you get to see me. Other people don't. All right. I don't like people. I like you guys. I don't like people. So, but I forgot where I was going with that. Roger, what did you say? See, I did it again. I don't know either way. Yeah. Hold on, I had one more passage over in 2 Timothy. Talking about our money here. T books are in alphabetical order if you can't find them. I can't. Well, see, I pulled my bookmark out a second ago and then turned the page. Just a second. I prepared for Bible class tonight on my phone. So therefore, my notes are right here. All right, 1 Timothy, there we go. 1 Timothy 6. I'm going to start again in verse, let's see here. We'll just go with verse 6, because that's kind of the point we're getting to. Now, godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing with these, we shall be content. But to those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So the world is familiar with at least some version of verse 10, right? The love of money is root of all evil. It gets tossed out there. Well, that's not what it says exactly right, but people know what that says. Really the important part though is before that, you know, about like, don't even try to be rich. Like, let those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare. I don't want to do that. I ain't trying to get rich. It's just not a priority. I don't think it's a priority for any of y'all. I don't see any of y'all bending over backwards to try to get rich and get a bigger house and a nicer car and all that. I don't see that here. Right. We're supposed to, if we're blessed like this, we're supposed to use that to help people. Right. right? If we have more funds, resources, whatever than we need, God says the reason you have that is for other people. Back to that pride, your sense of self, right? That prioritizing yourself. I'm going to say I think the two biggest dangers to the church, and everybody's got their own opinions on this. I'm sure Jason and Bill, everybody's got their own. One to me is teaching the Bible the way we've always taught it, because that's how you get off path. I'm not saying we teach it incorrectly at all. I'm saying we got to make sure every time we teach it, we've restudied and we're teaching it right, right? I think sometimes if we teach it the same way and the same way and the same way and the same way and the same way, at what point are we teaching our idea? Hopefully never, right? Hopefully never, and we're all very good students and we do all that right. But if we have those funds, we've got to use those correctly. That's the second thing I think is most dangerous to the church, honestly, is materialism. I do it wrong. I'll confess. Katrina likes me right now. I do it wrong. I'm not a good steward. Anybody else that way? You don't have to raise your hands. We spend on TVs, on a screen to blow our eyes out. I mean, really. I heard one thing. You know, the NFL is actually selling some tickets to some games this weekend. To season ticket holders only, that kind of stuff, right? Pittsburgh Steelers. Some season ticket holders are getting tickets, 13,000 seats. They're going to try to stop there from being a secondary market. There will be a secondary market for some of the only Steelers tickets you're going to get all year. I have no idea how astronomical those tickets are going to cost for Sunday. People will pay thousands of dollars to sit there and watch them play football. Thousands. And we're not talking hundreds. There will be people that are in that stadium that paid $5,000 to be there. Guaranteed. Because they paid way more net for them season tickets to begin with. Can you imagine spending that kind of money on entertaining yourself for a couple, 3 hours? You probably can, because you probably have. I have. You know, how much time does that take? How much money does that take? And I'm not saying, of course, you know, we always throw the caveat. We're not saying that that's bad. It's not bad to do stuff with your family. It's not bad. Entertainment's not bad in general, that kind of thing. It's bad when we get to the point of bad stewardship, right, where we're not helping others. We're only helping ourselves. And that's the world we live in. I mean, it's flat out the world we live in. Everything has to be bigger, better, faster. Everything has to taste good. You notice that? Y'all know that? Right? These people didn't worry about how their food tasted that much. At least most of them didn't. They just wanted food to stay alive, right? At some point, we decided we were so good that our food had to taste good now. We're going to be fat and lazy and have food that tastes good and all this kind of stuff. Like, these people were told to be servants of God. He'll lift you up. So we've read there in Job. I really like that account in Job of how he's, this is one of his friends that didn't give him some good advice before, but at this point he says, look, you come back to God and he's going to lift you up. Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, he will lift you up. We know James and John, of course, had a problem with that at one point at least, right? Because they wanted to be the best apostles, the closest apostles, whatever, right? The closest to the Lord. And he's like, no, he had to shut that down quick, right? We have mostly empty front rows. Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
Talking about somebody who serves himself. Solomon said, he that seeks silver will never be satisfied with silver. No matter what your goal or your God is, you don't need more, but you're never really satisfied.
Oh, yeah. I mean, y'all know of any happy multi-billionaires? I mean, I never met Bill Gates. Maybe he's happy. I don't know. I've never met Donald Trump. Maybe he's happy. I don't know. These people look stressed out to me, though. Right? Absolutely. You're never going to be happy. Right? You're never going to stop. Money's an addiction. At least it can be like anything else, right? I mean, how much money do we spend on hobbies and all this kind of stuff? Right? All right, let's move on because we get the same point again. Can't belabor it now. All right, so anything else before we move on to the other feast? All right, thank you. Verse 15. Now when one of them who sat at the table with him heard these things, he said to him, "Blessed is he who shall eat bread in the kingdom of God." Then he said to them, "A certain man gave a great supper and invited many, and sent his servant at supper time to say to those who were invited, 'Come, for all things are now ready.' But they all with one accord began to make excuses. The first said to him, 'I have bought a piece of ground, and I must go and see it. I ask that you have me excused.' And another said, 'I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I'm going to test them. I ask you to have me excused.' Still another said, 'I have married a wife, and therefore cannot come.' So that servant came and reported these things to his master. Then the master of the house, being angry, said to his servant, 'Go out quickly into the streets and lanes of the city, and bring in here the poor, the maimed, and the lame, and the blind.' And the servant said, 'Master, it is done as you commanded, and there is still room.' Then the master said to the servant, 'Go out into the highways and the hedges and compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. For I say to you that none of these men who were invited shall taste my supper.'" All right, so this is another one where we get a lesson for us and a lesson for the people he's talking to, right? The lesson to the people he's talking to is, we've invited y'all to supper so many times, right? How many times, like we just said in the Old Testament, did God try to get them back or bring them back and then they go again, right? So they are these people that have gotten the invitation and started making these excuses, right? Now we see him have this command basically about, well, go get all the sick folks. Go get the blind, the people that need me and want me. I'll take them, right? If they don't want me, don't drag them to supper, right? And it's funny because, you know, he doesn't say these people start making reasons. They're excuses. Why is it an excuse? Because there's no reason not to answer the invitation. Right? If you think there's a reason not to answer the invitation when God invites you, then we got to spend some more time reading and talking. Right?
If you go to the book of Acts, Paul basically has that very same speech to the people who are of the Jewish faith. Forget you all. We're going to Gentiles.
Yep. And you might even, again, it might be a little bit of a stretch to hammer this down as a prophecy concerning the Gentiles, but maybe when he says, well, then if there's still room, let's go out, get them other folks out of this highways and byways, all these hedges, all this kind of stuff, right? So, but the Jews refused the invitation, so we're going to go get some folks that want the invitation, right?
Well, they were first on the list.
They were invited. And they gave these excuses. I mean, we have the Old Testament, right? We know what happened. And let's look at their excuses, though, real quick, too, because it gets back straight back to the same priorities, right? The first said, well, I've bought some ground I got to go see. Let's see you later. I just bought some oxen. See you later. You know. And then one just said, well, I just got married. I'll see you sometime, right? So, I mean, what's your priorities? You know, these people didn't want to go to the feast. For whatever reason, they had excuses. We make excuses all the time for ourselves. We rationalize our sin in our heads every day, probably. I hope not every day. Hopefully we don't sin every day. It's possible not to sin every day. I hope you know that. But what's our priorities?
Guy who he had sent out to just go find people to fill it all with came back and said, well, go further.
Yeah.
Go out farther. Go find more people. Because I don't want there to be any space for any of these people who confirm me.
There you go. So who's invited? Who did Jesus invite? Obviously, everybody, right? So, yeah, we got to go find more people. And then some more people. And then some more people, right?
What compelled in 23 feedback? And I don't know, maybe your translation reads different, but mine says in verse 23, it says, then the master said to the servants, go out into the highways and hedges, compel them.
I'll answer it this way. We are compelled to be baptized and show our faith. Yes? The Bible, the word compels us to do that. Okay. Does that make any sense in that context?
Yeah.
It is telling us what to do. Right?
They were forced.
That's not forcing.
It's not forced.
It's receiving a set of instructions. Right? This is what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Now, you can still take it or leave it. Right? The whole thing about going the extra mile, we talk about how there's the Roman soldier compelling someone to walk with them to carry their junk. Same thing. That person still has an option. Right? They have an option. They can refuse the Roman soldier. It's not going to work out well for them, but they have an option. Right?
Right. Seriously.
Well, sometimes that's what fire and brimstone preaching is.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yes.
That is compelling.
It's compelling. It's, I mean, you know, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and that's why, you know, here shortly we'll have somebody offer an invitation, right? The invitation, you know, that's what we do. And hopefully somebody answers, right?
Yeah.
But we offer it. God offers it. We repeat it, I guess is what I should say. So, with the, and then of course, I guess we're running out of time, but one last point here. Jesus hung out with these people that the Pharisees don't hang out with, right? Jesus hung out with these people. The poor, the blind, the mute, deaf, the sinners is who Jesus hung out to. You know, he's taught or hung out with. That's who he's taught about why already. But
he found that the common people were accepting him.
Yes, and that's what I'm getting at is I think this probably I want to say maybe the Pharisees almost didn't even understand how he was getting such a following. You know, almost it's like. I'm inviting all these rich people. I'm big and important now. I'm the rich people and all that. Why are you such a problem when all you've got is the poor, the maimed, the blind, and all these folks? Right? Why are you such a problem when you're working with the low folks? But that's who Jesus wants. That's who he extended the invitation to. He extended it to everyone. Okay. Let's see if there's anything else I want to touch on there real quick.
Whoever he was. And when one of those who sat at the table with him, Nick Bread said, and he said to him, blessed is he who eats bread and sometimes stuff just comes out and I'm like, man, that's dope. And then I'll read it tomorrow and I'm just like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm just going to say that in itself, you know, to me, it's just good stuff.
Oh, yeah. And then the last verse there in this section, verse 24, for I say to you that none of those men who were invited shall taste my supper. Pharisees probably understood that. Okay? These people listening understood. Jesus didn't waste words. Right? There ain't a word in this book that we don't need to read and study. Jesus was talking to them and talking and teaching them and calling them out. Right? He said, y'all ain't going to eat supper. Right? I mean, very easy image for these guys. Right? You either go hungry or you answer to the invitation and you get filled. Right? Okay. I'm going to go ahead and dive on into the next section here because it's the same song, different verse. I mean that with all due respect. So verse 25, now great multitudes went with him and he turned and said to them. So there we go. What I was talking about, he's got the multitudes, right? It ain't the rich and the important people, though. Rich and important people in the kingdom, though, eventually. Okay. If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king, going to make a war against another king, does not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? Or else, while there is another, or while the other is still a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks conditions of peace. So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple. Plain language, right? Does Jesus literally mean you have to hate your father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, yes, all that?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Does Jesus say you might have to part ways with some of those people?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You've got to love me more than anything.
That's it.
Like we were talking about a while ago, sometimes we need to watch or maybe change the way we teach. Not what we teach, but the way we teach it. Because discipleship does come at a cost. That's why he's saying that, you know, love, you know, there may be friends that you have to give up. There may be things that you really enjoy, like football games, that you may have to give up. To be a Christian is, you know, as it says, carrying your cross, you know, all this stuff is dead. You know, when you think of cross, think of Jesus and then death on the cross. But at any rate, you cannot. So being a Christian is easy, but not. You know, and I think sometimes when we preach or I teach someone, I always teach them all the good and you need to do that. But then there is a cost to discipleship. There is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it costs you everything, right? Everything, right?
There's things that we do like Bill, and I agree with you. You know, I hadn't thought nothing about it on Sunday morning because to me it's just become that's what I do. So I don't think nothing of it, but like Bill said before, that's a sacrifice. You know, so there, I give up my Sunday morning. I enjoy it. I would can't think of a better place I'd rather be. But at the same rate, then I'm not going to be nowhere else. So, again, we need to, you know, as I teach, to realize that, you know, it's not all just, you know, God's going to bless you, you're going to have a new house like some of these TV preachers.
Yep.
No, there's a cost.
I listened to you too long. No, that's great stuff. What you said, you know, being a Christian is easy, but it's not. It's simple, I think, right? God says it's simple to please him, right? He says you don't have to be smart to be saved. I mean, that bluntly, the epistle says you don't have to be smart to be saved, right?
So.
It's simple, but it's not easy. Right?
You know, to me, again, and we mentioned this in class the other day, talking about you don't have to be smart. You have to work at it to not understand and repent and be baptized. People will tell you, you don't have to be baptized. You got to work at it not to get that far. I mean, that is.
Well, and again, you know.
And more than once, as it said, or different variations explained as antitypes and stuff, mm-hmm. But yet.
So getting back to the priorities that Jesus is talking about here, and then he's going to talk about how he prioritizes us to some degree. But say everything we got. So back to our priorities: your time, your money, your skills, whatever you have is God's and not yours, right? And I was critical on this one time. Oh, I can't go there. Okay. Never mind. So we'll let Buck pick up somewhere around there in that section with 25 and all that. Thank y'all.